Hey, it's Jack from 102.7 ESPN's Game Time, inviting you to watch the FIFA World Cup 26 with Michelob Ultra for Australia versus Egypt. The action happens at Little Woodrow's 5425 Burnett Road this Friday, July 3rd, starting at 11 a.m. Michelob Ultra will be on site with a lot of fun and Ultra giveaways. Michelob Ultra is a superior light beer and the official beer sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 26. Be sure to enjoy an Ultra as you cheer on your favorite team this Friday at Little Woodrow's on Burnett Road.
From the 102.7 ESPN studios in Austin, Texas, this is the Jeff and Ed Show.
Hey, welcome to our little show. Here's the way it works. I riff on stuff and you respond. Pretty straightforward. Phone numbers, call or text. Use them, 512-834-1027. That's 512-834-1027. You can follow me on Twitter. We don't say X. If you do, you know the producer flips out. On Twitter, I'm at Jeff Ward Show. Post your comments there. Get to the point. Please don't suck. Make the show better with your comments. That's at Jeff Ward Show. You can check out the podcast, subscribe to it. The Jeff Ward Show podcast is available wherever you download podcasts. And even though I look like Shrek, we post to YouTube as well. Subscribe to it, the Jeff Ward Show on YouTube. Give me a chance on this. The Southwest Conference, I said it. The Southwest Conference was 2026 before 2026. The death of the Southwest Conference is a mirror to what you see today. And before you say, shut up, old man, who's talking, what is the Southwest Conference? Who even mentions that stuff? Let me tell you, not only was the quality of football really good then and the same teams now, but it was the world you hear about now almost exactly. Read a fascinating story today, and I've thought the same thing. I lived through the same thing, but put down in details exactly how similar the Southwest Conference and death of the Southwest Conference is to what you get today. So there's a headline in the New York Times today. It says the Southwest Conference left a legacy and foreshadowed the future of college football. It's so true. The Southwest Conference died officially on February 25th of 1994. Arkansas, the only non-Texas program, bolted to the SEC, and they did so. You know, they I don't know if they want to argue they got tricked or whatever. They did so because they thought that Texas was leaving the league. And I'm sure they thought about it. No, they did think about it. So Arkansas freaks out and leaves. Out of that came the Big 12. But the Southwest Conference was, for those that don't know, was Texas A&M, Baylor, Rice, yes, Rice, SMU, TCU, Texas Tech, Houston, was added, by the way, and Arkansas. Once they bolted, it's an all-Texas league. So before you laugh it off, think about this. Right now, as of last year, six former Southwest Conference schools, Texas A&M, TCU, SMU, Houston, and Texas Tech. You know what they went last season? They went 61-18. 61-18. Granted, Baylor, a former Southwest Conference member, is a mess under Dave Aranda. He's going to get fired. Arkansas is awful too, and Rice is not in a major conference and shouldn't even be playing football. All that's true. But those six schools went 61-18. But what, it's a really well-done piece that people haven't thought about, that I've mentioned a number of times. Everything you're seeing now is what the Southwest Conference went through, or Southwest Conference did to itself, and ultimately what broke them up. It ultimately killed the league that today, to be honest, would be pretty fun and competitive. I mean, you have those six programs in the same league, it's fun and it's competitive, and it's marketable. It's A&M, Texas, TCU, Houston, Tech. I'd throw Texas State in there over Rice any day of the week. You've got a good league, 61-18 a year ago. It would work now. It would. No, it's not going to happen. No, I get that. So I know people haven't even thought of that name, Southwest Conference. Again, you're just calling me an old man and saying, oh, back when, and all that stuff. But everything that went wrong in the Southwest Conference is exactly what's happening now. Okay, so for example, what you see today is the same things the Southwest Conference went through, and it killed it. And all the things talked about then, all the things that happened then, are the exact same issues now. Paying players. It was beyond comprehension, given that it was against the rules. Paying players went to the governor's office. He's approving the payment of players at the governor's office. At that time, TV, we didn't have streaming, but TV rights were one of the things, you know, and Texas was on the front end of this. Texas dropped a hand grenade into that league because of chasing TV rights. But the TV rights, the college football landscape you know today is largely because of a court case involving, I know, Oklahoma, but maybe Texas too, that completely changed the way television impacted college football. Because if it wasn't for Texas and Oklahoma, there was a time when I think you were restricted to 3 games a year on national TV. It happened when I was in college. I went from three games a year on TV, on national TV, to every single game was on television, all in that time frame. That stuff went down. The playoff was a topic. The same things are debated now. Exact. The same things are going to kill and are in the process of killing the sport now. So, first of all, the entire sport is losing long-standing games. I would argue, I just gave you those 6 teams, and you could add a couple more, that the Southwest Conference with Texas schools would be marketable. It would be interesting. It would be good football, too. I mean, all the schools that I just mentioned are in major conferences and went combined 61-18. And yes, that includes Houston, and won 10 games a year ago. But you've got now this problem of losing long-standing games. USC and Notre Dame won't play again. Nebraska, Oklahoma hasn't played in a long time. But the Southwest Conference, you could drive to every game. And it was cool because we all went to the same schools. But think about this. A&M, Texas A&M, has not played Houston since 1995. They wouldn't want to now. They haven't played TCU since 2001. They haven't played Baylor nor Tech since 2011, and haven't played SMU since 2014. So all this stuff is blown up. And I'm not sure it really needs to be blown up. I think the 6 schools I just listed to you, I could go out and I could argue about television sets and all that stuff and probably sell the advertising for far more than I could having Texas play Kentucky or Mississippi State or any number of the SEC schools. I can make more money. We're not going back, but it's sort of dead and honestly kind of unnecessarily. But here you go. Here's the other mirror to what has happened today. The New York Times, it says, discussions remain about reining in spending on players, pooling television rights, and playoff expansions are all versions of conversions that were held decades ago in the Southwest Conference. The same things talked about then, the same things that killed it then, are the same things happening today. What was out of control then, and it's out of control now, 2 things killed the Southwest Conference, and both came from the same problem, which is exactly what will eat the sport alive now. Okay? And that is, it's greed. Greed drove everything then, and it's driving everything now. The greed then is exactly what happens now. Whenever people go, I don't know what you're talking about, the rich men running these teams, it's exactly what I saw happen then. It's exactly what the Times is writing about now. And that is, The greed came from rich men that take over programs wanting to own a winning team. And it wasn't just SMU. But if you use SMU as an example, it's a template of what's happened today. It's a template probably what's happened at most places. It's a template of what's happening at Texas Tech. Texas has money coming from so many different places, it doesn't need to be run by one guy. But a program like SMU had just a couple of people running the place, and they wanted to win, and it got so competitive to pay players in the Southwest Conference because other people started paying players that they just went all in and couldn't stop and wouldn't stop. Same thing's happening now. It's exact same look. It's the same mission statement. It's the same greed. It's that they become untouchable and that the coaches and the people and the presidents of universities can't get them to stop. And ultimately it ends badly. This will all end badly some way, but it did in the Southwest Conference. And so greed drove everything. And so the greed came from these guys taking over the programs, and they just really wouldn't stop and would do anything to win because we were all neighbors then. Everyone ratted out each other. Everyone did. Once it started, because there were rules then, but I think the same effect happens now, even though there's no rules, it's still going to be the same thing. Everyone ratted out each other. It really started with one particular player. It started with a recruiting visit at Texas. And he started telling people what he wanted. He started dictating how much money he wanted. And he didn't stop. And you would hear this from a lot of guys. And then one school would be frustrated and say, well, we can't pay him, but we have to pay him. And then somebody found out, and then they would rat each other out. So it's the same thing. The rich guys will take you down. They will take you down because they think they run your place. And no is never anything that they have to deal with. The other thing, which is an issue now, agents were all over the place and were fronting players, cars, and money. Guess what's happening now? Really good story in the Dallas Morning News today about agents. High school coaches saying that they're hitting up these families, most of them poor families, for 25-30% when the going rate is 4-8%. It's predatory lending. Just like it was back then. The target was star players from lower income families. Front them some money, front them some cars, and then they backdate a contract with you. So when they get to the NFL, you make money. Well, when they couldn't get to the NFL and nobody could collect from them, organized crime members got involved. It's the same thing you're seeing now. And so I'm not kidding when I say organized crime got involved. People went to jail. Players testified against them, had to go to the witness protection program. Today, the agents are predatory. They're doing the same thing. The big difference is they're going out and saying, you know, people that don't even know what's going on, they would have no idea how much an agent should make. They'd have no idea how much is reasonable. I mean, listen, all of a sudden you're a family that's had nothing and somebody says, I can get your kid $1 million. My fee is only 30%. Standard, by the way, is 4-8. So it's exactly the same now. That's what happened in the Southwest Conference. It was as bad or worse than the sugar daddies running around, and they were running around too. In fact, you'd go to parties and all of them be there together, be fighting over who could give you the money. But you have to pay it back. That's what's going to happen now. It's going to happen again. So, and then when there were rules, there was a time when every Southwest Conference program, except Rice, was on probation. Every one of them. Because everyone was ratting each other out. Greedy men paying players ruined SMU. And I'll tell you what else it did. It killed off an incredible run that Jackie Sherrill would have had at Texas A&M. They got in trouble. There's money in FedEx envelopes and cash and all this stuff going on. And he was on the way. I mean, one of the best teams in college football who should have won a national championship. Had that not come apart, it would have been a dominant program. They were on their way to a Miami-like roster of talent. He ends up getting booted out, shoved out the door. Same thing happened at TCU with Jim Wacker when he was winning. You had successful coaches and successful programs who then, because the money guys and the agents got involved, they ended up losing their jobs. And so it killed off pretty successful coaches in a league that was, they were taking programs, not named Texas, to big places. The desperation to win would lead program after program to knowingly break the rules. Now you don't have any rules, but you're going to have the same problems crop up. It's already happening. The only difference today is that it's technically, again, although it's technically against the rules, how they're paying guys is technically against the rules. They brag about their roster payrolls. But today's problem is not going to come from narking on each other. It's not going to come from breaking the rules, even though they're breaking the rules. It's going to come from the same way, and that is to keep and gather talent, just like it was in the Southwest Conference, even more so because you had the best high school players all in one state, and you had all these competitive programs in one state. But they're still good. But the idea is programs will need and go to shady people to find shady ways to get money. Not everyone, as the payrolls start to approach 50 million plus, which is what we're hearing now, very few programs to do that, so guess where they have to go? They go to really shady people. It ends badly. I mean, most programs will not be able to keep up with a $50 million roster. It's exactly what caused the cheating before. If you wanted to, for SMU to compete and have any chance against Texas, they would have to buy the players that used to come to Texas to come to SMU. It worked. It worked. But then it gets too expensive. Then you have to keep inviting more money guys in. Then you have to turn to really shady people to keep financing your team. And then it ends up blowing up. You're in bed with awful people. That whole scenario is going to play itself out on a bigger stage. It's a really good read. I know it sounds old, but it is every problem highlighted in the New York Times about the Southwest Conference is exactly what is a problem now and will be a problem in the near future. It is how the end will come. Same thing, even without rules. All right, phone number is 512-834-1027. That's 512-834-1027. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN. You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 102.7 ESPN.
You can have a bunch of takeaways about the World Cup, but there's no denying this one. And it is a wake-up call to the entire world. The African countries have been impressive. The Congo, right? That's the war-torn Congo. Played England's ass off today and didn't do it in a weird park the bus kind of way. They went in and ran with them. And if it wasn't for Harry Kane and England, they would have lost. And now you have Senegal. Didn't I say like 10 minutes ago you would rather play Belgium than Senegal if you're the U.S.? Senegal is leading Belgium 2-0 at 60 minutes in Seattle. So the Europeans, even leading up to this World Cup, and historically have dismissed African countries and saying blah, 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 blah. But if the U.S. wins tonight, you're going to have, I don't know how many, you're going to have three North American teams. Senegal holds form. You're going to have Morocco, Senegal. Cape Verde is not going to make it, but still. I mean, you have a bunch of African teams that will either advance or have played everybody's ass off. And they're not a fluke. I mean, it's not – Senegal's the better side. If I'm an American fan, I really don't want to. I mean, it's going to be exciting because they're going to get up and down the field. I'd take Belgium all day, any day, as the preference. And that's not something anybody would have ever thought you would say. But that's the way it is now. All right, this is, we learned, was it Heather Dinich yesterday, dropped on everyone that in college football, if you're the number one seed, you get to select your, you get to select your destination. So whatever, quote, bowl game you would want to play in, you get to make that pick. So if it were Texas, obviously they would play the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. You get to pick. Miami would stay home and play in, not the Orange Bowl, but it would be the Orange Bowl, right? Well, apparently there's more to it than that. I don't know why college football can't make it, just can't say, if you're the higher seed, you have home field advantage. Home field advantage carries until there's a championship game, you know, just like the NFL playoffs.
Here's how the number one seed could have a strategic advantage this year in the college football playoff. This is new this year. The number one seed gets to pick its quarterfinal bowl site and the semifinal site if it advances, if it wins the quarterfinal game. These are the quarterfinals this year, the Fiesta, Rose, Cotton, and Peach. The number one seed is still going to play the winner of the 8-9 game. But if you're the number one seed, maybe you want to go to the Fiesta Bowl because it's on December 30th, which would give you some extra time to prepare for a semifinal instead of playing on New Year's Day. Also, think about this. If you're the number one seed, you could play a little bit of defense. Because if Georgia, for example, is the 8 or 9 seed, why would you want to go to the Peach Bowl, where it would basically be a home game for them? So you would want to avoid that. Or maybe you want to do something that keeps LSU out of the Sugar Bowl and that fan base. So there are some decisions that are going to have to be made. Selection Day just got a little more interesting, guys. And the number one seed just got a new perk.
I'm not quite sure why she's talking as if she's reading a bedtime story, but yeah. I mean, I think that's cool, and I think that's, it's even more than we thought we knew yesterday, and it makes perfect sense. See, people that say, well, the regular season doesn't matter much, this is exactly why you give perks and a carrot for the regular season to mean something. It's exactly what you do in the NFL, and that is you want to secure home field advantage. I think this is stupid that you... It's better that you get to pick Miami or Dallas or wherever, but it's stupid that these are not home and home games. Well, but the bowls. Day two of me asking the exact same question. What are the bowls? What is the point? Well, they're corporate sponsors. Okay. Then Allstate or Progressive or Michelob Ultra or whatever would be the sponsor of the quarterfinal, the semifinal, whatever. It's just at your stadium. So what's... Why do you need to be in Atlanta? Why do you need to be in L.A. for the corporate sponsor to get the airtime that they want? What is the point? I mean, this setup, which is better than it has been, I don't think it goes far enough. I mean, I don't know why you just have to pick the one seed. I don't know why we can't do this for all the higher seeds. But this is why the arguments in college football ring hollow so often. The regular season means nothing. No, the regular season should mean you're trying to secure home field advantage. You're not just trying to secure a bye. You're trying to secure home field advantage. It should mean more than you're trying to secure the right to say, I want to play in Dallas or Miami. But at least it's on the table now. And I think we're on day two of no one providing any argument whatsoever. What is the point of a bowl game? Except you get some swag. All right, 66 minutes in, it's Senegal 2, Belgium 0, and you don't feel like at any moment Belgium has a chance. They're barely in this game and having to foul everybody. It's kind of a, I mean, in terms of sex appeal, just for, I don't know that it matters too much who the U.S. opponent would be next. I think it would might mean more to the casual fan if it were Belgium, just because it's, oh gosh, it's the Europeans. But they'll be drawing a much better team in Senegal. And I'll assume the U.S. would be favored if they were to win tonight. They should. But I don't know if I'd make that bet. All right, 512-834-1027 on Twitter. It's at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN. You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 102.7 ESPN.
Well, on Twitter, it's at Jeff Ward Show. Here we go to tweets. These are pretty well done. I keep waiting on the tributes for the Village People, but you're not coming through on the tributes. Pick your game up. Let's have some tributes to the Village People. Name your favorite character. Favorite song. Go. Trump's ordering the flags at half staff in honor of the Village People. Westman David tweets, were players paid during Daryl Royal's era? No, you're not going to believe what I'm about to say, because I would tell you the truth. No, not the way you think. Because Texas didn't have to. And I remember watching this happen. And so a Texas or a Nebraska, or I'm talking about the Royal era, or even an Oklahoma, they didn't have to. They had every built-in advantage. Remember that when you were deciding on going to a college program, up until the cheating days and up until now, you made that decision on a few things. So back in those days, you probably made the decisions on location. You made the decision on winning and tradition. You made that decision on academics. You didn't, in the Royal era, you didn't view the NFL at the way you would now. And so they didn't have to. And they would sign as many guys as they wanted to just so other people wouldn't be able to sign them. They have, 100 guys on scholarship. The rules changed. So the answer is no, not paid as big and as sinister as what you would find in the 80s with the SMU days. So I'm going to say no. And then you get to this is true in the 80s. Let's say you take a Nebraska or a Texas. Again, still didn't need to pay guys. You had every built-in advantage. And so you made, if you're a recruit that wasn't thinking you're going to be an NFL player, you went where there was tradition, history, and all the other stuff. You got the greatest training that there is. The money was big. I mean, no one could match what Nebraska and Texas had at that time, and Notre Dame and a few others. But the bluest of the blue bloods had giant advantages just in terms of money and training. So you didn't need it. But the money paid. And I remember talking to people because I had family members who had played at SMU. And I got recruited by SMU a little bit. No, actually, until the very last minute. I wouldn't have gone there. I'd be a wide receiver catching 9 passes a year or something and blocking all the time. But the word started to get out. I remember I must have been a sophomore or junior in high school when I started hearing this, that they were paying guys. And it worked. It worked. The only chance, look, the only chance, it's the same thing today. And Tech fans are going to be offended by what I'm about to say, but it's true. The only way to get on a level with, I won't use Texas because that'll piss you off. The only way to get to a level of Miami, of Michigan, of Ohio State is to buy guys. Now, they're buying too, I know. But they have built-in advantages you don't. So you've got to, in the cheating days, SMU's only chance was to buy guys that normally would have gone to Texas, Notre Dame, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and the small USC and the Blue Bloods. And they did it. I can tell you, I played on a Texas team that had the most players drafted ever. It was a team that had, I think we had four All-Americans on defense alone. The entire secondary was drafted in the first round. I think we had one guy who was a second-round pick. It was just a ridiculous, and that wasn't because of buying players. It was just that Texas had that much clout, that much street cred at that time. Playing against SMU, I remember looking out and thinking, I thought we were really talented. They're just as good as we are. Everywhere you looked on the field, there were equal players. It's NFL players all over the park. And they bought him, and they bought him well. And it worked. And so, you know, your only real chance then is to do what SMU did. And your only real chance is kind of what happened at TCU, too, and many other programs. The only chance was you had to buy guys away from the Blue Bloods. And then the Blue Bloods would get pissed and give them cars. So you had two levels of cheating in the Southwest Conference that were a real problem. The one that's not talked about much is, because it's too dirty and too ugly, is the agents. So you had the buying of the players, and SMU just had to go scorched earth. I remember sitting down, I called into a meeting with some big money alumni guys, and we're asking, what's going on? Why is Texas slipping? And I said, I can tell you right now, man, we hear it every single day. The guys that normally would come here are getting paid to go somewhere else. It's that simple. It's working. We hear it every day. Take a guy on a recruiting visit, he would tell you exactly what he was getting. He would say, do you have my money? Man, I've got a pitcher of beer, but... And so there was a belief, well, gosh, wouldn't you want... You should want to come to Nebraska. You should want to come to Texas. You should want to come to Notre Dame. And... Even if you were a non-blue blood, you had to try to spend and buy to keep up with the others. So the answer is, I doubt if it went on in the six. I mean, to a large degree, I doubt if it went on in the 60s and 70s. The agent thing was a different issue, and that did affect guys that I knew at Texas, right? So the belief was, and it was a little naive, that you didn't have to, if you're at Nebraska or Texas or Michigan or Notre Dame, you didn't have to pay guys to come to your school. They were going to come there anyway. But where guys at those programs got in real trouble, I mean dangerous trouble, is that the agent world, it's so crazy. There's more agents than there are draftable players. There are not that many college players that are going to make an agent that much money. Most of them were guys like me. Bounce around the NFL. The average NFL career is a little over 3 years. So there's not that many superstars that are going to make an agent a lot of money. And so that whole market was so competitive to try to win a player who would be worth a lot of money. And so you'd have 1,000 agents chasing 20 guys who were going to be first rounders. I remember hanging out with one of my teammates knocking on the door. Hey, got some beers. Let's go. Go downstairs, and he's got a black Jaguar. Where'd you get it? Well, I'm going to be a first rounder. No, you're not. Well, yeah, so-and-so got it for me. They're fronting the money, blah, blah, blah. I said, man, you got to get this car back. And sure enough, unfortunately, the guy hurt his knee, wasn't drafted at all, and they came to get it back. And so that was another area where the money was flowing. And it was, the parties were crazy. The drugs were crazy. They went further than even the sugar daddy alumni guys. And they were the agents, a group of agents. Not all were bad, but it was an unregulated time, just like it is now. This is why they're just eating these kids up and their families up with predatory lending. That's what's going on. You should know this. Is that sooner or later, they're loaning out a bunch of money, and it's not going to be enough good players can make them back their money. And so they get pretty upset, and they got to go collect. Well, the problem in the 80s was there was one group that was trying to monopolize the best college players. And you would see them everywhere, every party, every all-star game. And they were part of, I think it was the Gambino crime family. And their goal was to, if I could go out and secure contracts for enough potential first-round players, we now own a big chunk of the draft, right? We're going to make money that way. And guess what else we get to do? We front them enough money, they're going to owe us. And when they owe us, then we can fix games. And it was everywhere. Everywhere. These guys were everywhere. And so if you weren't at an SMU or a program like that getting paid off by rich sugar daddies, you were at a blue blood program and you're a star player at a powerhouse, you're starting to see cars and money from agents, and your family's seeing cars and money from agents, and everyone knew it was against the rules, but for some guys never had a dollar and knows that you're going to the NFL or thinks you're going to go to the NFL, it was hard to pass up. Well, the NFL figured that out. The NFL found out, and the NFL notified a lot of players and said that if you signed an agreement or posted an agreement with so-and-so firm, then you need to end that agreement or you will not be drafted. Well, guess what happens when guys said, hey, I'm sorry, bud, I can't do business with you. The NFL said they're going to leave me alone, because the NFL knew that organized crime was doing this. And they knew the risk of games being thrown. Well, as soon as my teammates and buddies started saying, I can't do business with you, they said, I need my car and my money back. Look out then. And so you had these weird double tracks of sugar daddies and crazy agents. And it was really the Wild West of which parties and the money could be the wildest. T3 Monahan tweets, if Cody Campbell had been around Tech in the 80s, would they have gotten the death penalty? Only an SMU was going to get the death penalty. I mean, they wouldn't give the death penalty to Texas. They wouldn't give it to Michigan. It was only going to be someone like that. So, yeah. You know, SMU, because I had family members that played there that were, you know, knew all that was going on. The thing that got SMU is they got put on probation a couple times. And this is why I tell you all the time, when rich men take over your program, they just don't let go. The coach has no say anymore. The president of the university has no say. It just gets taken from you. And so they just don't let go, because everything about it is ego for them. This is my team. I'm the one financing this. We're winning because of me, is the way they think, and they feel pretty cool about it. And would Tech have? Yeah, they would have. They were given plenty of chances to stop. SMU was put on probation, was warned. Everybody knew what was going on. There's a good documentary about it, 30 for 30. And they were told repeatedly, stop, stop, stop. And so the NCAA rightly said to send the message to everyone, particularly in the Southwest Conference where all this cheating was going on, they're done. And sure enough, would it have happened to a program like Texas Tech? Yeah. Yeah. And you'd say, well, even if you're politically connected, yeah, SMU, the payments were being approved by the governor of the state of Texas. So that didn't even matter at the time, but that's because the NCAA had some power and had some strength back then. So, but if this were a time period when you couldn't pay players, the smartest thing to win for a Texas Tech or a TCU or someone like that would be to pay players, because you have to buy them away from Ohio State, Michigan, and Texas. SMU had a winning formula, and it worked. They took the two of the best running backs on the planet that normally would have been at Texas or Nebraska or Notre Dame or Oklahoma, and they went and got them both. And I remember telling rich guys who were complaining about what was happening at Texas why all of a sudden you went from an 11-1 season to a 6 or 7 win season. I said, because the guys aren't coming here. You fools. You think it's coaching? It's the guys aren't coming here. The best players are now going elsewhere. They're getting money. So the money worked. I mean, SMU was ridiculously good on both sides of the ball. I mean, it was, I never played in a game where I saw as much talent on the field at one time. And I grew up going around NFL games. So I knew what NFL talent looked like. And it was everywhere when we were playing SMU right before they got the death penalty. Like, I didn't think there'd be anybody better than some of the guys we had. And they, it was equal. It was crazy to see. Like, 1 year, you just destroy SMU. And then 2 years later, you look out there and it's first round players are all over the place. It was that noticeable. At Allen Travels and Eats tweets, I don't know anything about soccer, but Pele and Messi. Well, there'd be different eras. You know, one guy's dead. I'm guessing when we hydrated by water hoses in the 70s and 80s, that would be laughable. Yes. The hydration breaks are Fox's way of saying, here's the two-minute warning to have some ad time. And no, they don't have a hose over there to hose you down. They don't need it. I think it hurts the game. Most of them don't even want it. But Fox made $250 million. Where's the game? The game tonight is in Santa Clara. Okay? At kickoff, I don't know what the temperature is. What's the temperature, Trey?
Probably like 68 degrees.
Okay. So,
be my guess.
Yeah. There's nobody. Those guys are the fittest of the fittest, man. It's none of them want that break.
They didn't have that in Qatar where it's way hotter.
Right. There was in Atlanta indoors today, they had two hydration breaks in the air conditioning. I don't know what the temperature is in Seattle. They've had two for this game between Senegal and Belgium, of which it is now in the 85th minute. The guy I haven't seen play in years, Emelu Lukaku, that's his name, just scored for Belgium. It's 2-1 Senegal in the 85th minute. If you're a U.S. fan, you know what you want. You want extra time. You want extra time and penalty kicks. You want your next opponent to have had to have played as many minutes as possible, whether it's Belgium or Senegal. So you're cheering on Belgium to tie it up. I think you're cheering. I think the U.S. would want Belgium more than Senegal. I do. Isn't that him, right? That's Lukaku?
I think.
Yeah. They brought him on.
Yep, that's
they
him.
Brought him on a minute and a half ago, and his first touch in the game is a goal.
I remember him last on Inter Milan.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's on Napoli with
KDB.
Was
a big, he was a big deal a few years ago.
He dated Meg Thee Stallion.
He did?
I think so.
Holy cow. That's a good piece of trivia. Huh. All right, well, it's 2-1, 86th minute. And he'd give the U.S. back line some trouble. He's going about 240. All right, on Twitter, it is at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN. You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 102.7 ESPN.
Hey, did I say about 5 minutes ago the best thing for the U.S. would be for Senegal and Belgium to go to extra time and guys play a bunch of minutes and work really hard? Yeah, well, that happened in the 89th minute. In Seattle. Senegal. Man, another thing you got to watch is goalkeeping in the end really matters a lot. Like, it's like relief pitchers or field goal kicking. You only notice it when it goes wrong. And for Senegal, it went horribly wrong. Belgium has tied the game in Seattle 2-2. And we are in the last, there's seven extra minutes. So absent another choke, this game goes another 20 minutes. And then we can debate penalty kicks if that happens too. If you're the U.S., it's what you want.
They might score again.
Yeah,
they almost did.
They almost scored again. I'm not quite sure what Senegal thought they were doing the last 5 minutes of this game. All you had to do was just sit back there and fight for your life. But it's really entertaining. Like, it's a lot of fun when somebody decides not to defend at all. All right, I want you to listen to this. This is I'm usually don't believe ever. I don't believe much of what happens in a reel or anything like that. But this is one of the most fascinating bits, and it is a bit. It's Chris Sims. I'm almost positive Chris Sims and whoever, I don't know if somebody does a podcast with him or what. They are with the Rams, Sean McVay. They've got a card, and what they do is, this dude is amazing. They go to Sean McVay, and they begin asking him random plays that happened in his career. And they're throwing out bizarre plays. And Sean McVay, as young as he is, has been coaching a long time. He remembers every single play.
Week 12, Saints at Rams. 4:29 in the second quarter. 2nd and 7 on the Saints 7. What happens?
Oh, Josh Reynolds touchdown off schedule play versus a 3-man rush.
You're absolutely right.
Are you kidding me?
You're unbelievable. Like now computer. We are going to go to, this is Sean McVay's time in Washington.
Oh, no.
So we're bringing it back to 2015, week 7. Bucks at Skins.
Yep.
2nd and 7 on the Tampa Bay 24. 58 seconds left in the fourth quarter.
Jamison Crowder wheel route down the right sideline.
Jamison Crowder wheel route down the right sideline. Set up the first down, and then how did that drive end?
Jordan Reed touchdown and a 4x1 individual ISO slant.
And what meme was that game?
You like that.
He's good. He's real good. Check out the brain on Sean.
You're amazing.
That was 2015 when he was an assistant coach.
That's incredible.
And they said when they came back on the reel, said that they're going to do it again. But he was going to get every one of them right. He remembers every single play he called. That was when he was an assistant with Washington.
They dropped the ball not hiring him, the Washington football team.
Oh.
They went with Jay Gruden instead.
Yeah. Imagine. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think successful NFL teams are really about ownership that hires a good GM who hires a good coach. I don't know if he would have been surrounded by good. I mean, remember, the then Redskins, Dan Snyder was a perv and an idiot.
And he was really young, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
But yes, no doubt.
In hindsight.
I can't even. I mean, imagine hiring Sean McVay if you're the Rams and he's 32, whatever he was. I don't even know if he was that. It's a really funny bit. It's Chris Sims and some other guy. And apparently they do more of them. And he never misses. He never misses on the results of his play calls. That's a pretty cool game. Except that 99 out of 100 coaches wouldn't even come close to getting many of them right. How old was he when they hired him?
I think he was like 38.
No,
he was much younger. Yeah, he was like 30.
He might be in his 20s.
Yeah, he was in his 20s. They hired him in 2010 and as an offensive assistant, and he did that for about a year. Then he became the tight ends coach and then the OC in 2014, and he left in 2017 to go be the coach of the Rams.
I have a theory that if and when the Rams win the Super Bowl this year, remember, it's Super Bowl or bust. Getting there doesn't even matter. Their entire objective is to win the whole thing. Everything they've done is to win the whole thing. I kind of think that, oof.
Senegal almost won it there.
I got to think that when Matthew Stafford walks away, I feel like he's going to walk away too.
That's been the rumor for many years. That
right,
they
like
would all
just
walk
you've
away.
Given it all there. You've thrown everything into it. I just feel like he's such a mad scientist and so good at what he does. He of course, he'll have his pick of wherever he wants to go. Sort of Sean Payton-like. He can sit back and find an organization that'll spend the money and give him the players that he wants.
He'd go work for Fox.
Yeah.
Or NBC.
Yeah, he will. I don't know. I have that theory. I could just sort of see that happening. It's like the two of them have done all they can. Because after this year, I don't know what they do, right? I mean, they've spent everything and have got, and particularly if they go and sign Aaron Darnold, imagine that.
They got to bring him back out of retirement.
I mean, imagine that. I don't care if he plays 5 downs a game. Look at what you have now. All right, so it's 2-2 with a couple minutes left, which might mean there might be two more goals in Senegal v. Belgium, who the U.S. gets the winner of this game in Seattle next. But unless the game follows its current form, they go to extra time, and so you've got another, 30 minutes? And then penalty kicks, which follows exactly how things have gone. Don't be shocked if the U.S. ends up there, too. All right, 512-834-1027 on Twitter, at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 1027 ESPN. This is 1027 ESPN, KPPA HD2 and K274AX, Austin.